Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high-rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back, plus no payments for 90 days, and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you, from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
We went from normal life, healthy child to acute lymphoblastic leukemia, or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.
Hello, this is Let's Talk About Myths, Baby, and I am here with a very special episode. Yes, it is a Tuesday, and I'm here with a conversation episode. And do you know why? It's because it's a conversation episode that I know so many of you are going to want to hear. Of course, I think you should want to hear all my conversation episodes because I talk with really cool people about really dorky shit. But this one, well, there is a certain webcomic that started out about the same time as I started this podcast, really coincidentally, and one which people still to this day recommend to me, and I find it so precious when anyone thinks that I haven't already heard of it, and it's so well-meaning and lovely, and it's just because everyone fucking loves Lore Olympus so much. Myself included. I absolutely love Rachel Smythe's Lore Olympus. It is a super fun webtoon that is retelling the story of Hades and Persephone in a way that I love, and that says a lot because I'm pretty picky about that couple, as you all may well know. But Lore Olympus is just doing it so beautifully. Rachel's work is so gorgeous. The illustrations are stunning, and the whole story has so much depth and meaning, and the way that she's using the gods and the goddesses and these characters of myth is so unique and lovely. And anyway, I follow it week to week. I do the fast pass. I love it so much. And the reason I'm talking to Rachel, aside from the fact that she and I have been Twitter friends for a long time and we've been meaning to chat, is because Lore Olympus is coming out as a print edition of the book, which is really cool. I love print copies of books, especially when they're beautiful, full-color graphic novels about Greek mythology. Like, yes, fucking please. So today, I talked to Rachel about Lore Olympus. In hindsight, did we talk that much about it being a print book? No. But that was the reason that we talked. We talked about mythology generally, Lore Olympus, what she's doing with Lore Olympus, and sort of everything therein, about sourcing and finding sources and our own obsession with primary sources. And just generally, we had such a good time. It was just such a fun conversation. It was so incredible to talk to Rachel. And I just know that you're all going to enjoy it so much. So if you haven't already pre-ordered your copy of Lore Olympus in physical, beautiful book form, it comes out the day this podcast is released, hence this episode coming out on a Tuesday. That is November 2nd. The book is available, and I personally am so excited for it, and I was so thrilled to get an advanced copy and be considered for all this. Feels so fancy. Anyway, I'm a super dork. This was such a fun conversation. I know you're all going to love it because so many of you just already love Lore Olympus, and God, it was just so much fun to talk to Rachel. So here you go. This is episode 143, Adapting Greek Myth, The World of Lore Olympus with Rachel Smythe. Thank you so much for doing this.
And thank you for having me.
Oh, gosh. It's I'm very thrilled. I mostly just want to talk about your use of mythology generally. Mm-hmm. So obviously, like, I mean, the depictions of Hades and Persephone are going to be like the biggest things for everybody. For me, I love their relationship in Lore Olympus, but I also just absolutely am obsessed with like every other character. And I think that's just like the general mythology nerd in me where I'm like, yeah, like I like them. They're like, I'm a big fan, but I'm also like, Eros is one of my favorite characters, or like your Poseidon. I want to make sure you talk, not just me like talking about how much I love all the individual ones. So I just kind of want to, I mean, I guess just get a sense of like, how did you set about creating your version of all of these characters? Like who, I mean, maybe like who did you start with, or who kind of gives you the most inspiration? Does that sound like a question you can answer?
It does. It's a question like, at all. That's a huge question. No, I think, God, it's kind of like one of those, how long is a piece? Is like, it's such a, you know, a big part of it. And like, much time I have spent sitting, being like, how do I answer this question in an articulate and intelligent way? But I think maybe one of the strongest point that I have really is the questions that I have around mythology when I read it. So, I mean, we have a lot of like what we do know, which is great, but there's like a lot of what we don't like. I'm like, you know, you read it and you're like, but I have questions, positive questions, but like the likelihood of us getting the answers to those questions. I would love it if someone was like, we have excavated a site and we've found like, I don't know, some scroll, and it's got all the answers on it that you wanted to know.
So could you imagine? Like, oh my God.
It would be a party. It would be like, I'd be like, give me that. I want to know. Tell me this. So, but yeah, I think it is very much about like joining the dots. So I'm sorry, this is going to be such a long-winded answer, but...
No, please.
Okay, so, like, this is a bit in the Odyssey, right? Okay, there's a bit in the Odyssey where there's, like, a bard, and he's singing, he's telling the story of Aphrodite, Hephaestus, and Ares. Mm-hmm, and, you know, this is fantastic little story, and that's all like, oh, the women don't come with modesty. Like, they don't come and look at Aphrodite being stuck in this, you know, net with Ares. But there is a bit that always leaves me, like, I just want to know. And, like, even maybe you might know, because I'm not, like, I don't have, like, any sort of, like, classics qualification or anything like that. But, like, so Poseidon is like, why are you doing this, Hephaestus? He's like, let me help you, because I think even at the time they're all like, I mean, this is like very juicy but also deeply shameful, and like the context is there because they talk about like the female goddesses do not come, they're like, we stay at home because this is so scandalous, this is a very scandalous story. And even Zeus is like, the vibe that I get, he's like, God. What a mess. And Poseidon's like, oh, this is kind of shameful. What are you doing? What are you doing? And Hephaestus is like, I'm very upset. I'm very distraught. And Poseidon's like, I will pay, like, I think it's like the dowry back or something. And I'm like, what bones do you have in this though, Poseidon? What bones? Like, what is your stake in this? And I still, like, you'd think, like, if it was Zeus, it would make sense to me. Because he, like, I think, arranged this. It's his thing that he arranged, mm-hmm. as far as I know. But suddenly Poseidon is there being like, I've got you. And I'm like, what? Now you're reasonable? Like,
no, that,
and it
that
really,
is...
like, and it keeps me awake. I'm like, why? Why did he care? Because he generally seems to be, like, Poseidon seems to be very chaotic.
And yes. I have never thought about this question, and now it will keep me up at night.
If you find out, please let me know.
But you're right. Like, Poseidon, I mean, which leads me directly into, I'm so obsessed with your take on Poseidon because he is ridiculous in the best possible way. And, like, real Poseidon is, like, violent in a really depressing kind of way.
He's very surly. Like, he's Captain Surly out of all of them, as I understand.
Yeah.
He's the most, like, if anyone's going to get mad, it's him. He's going to get mad.
Like, yeah, he's going to get mad, and he tends to, like, be, like, just a more violent person, which is why I enjoy yours, where he's just, like, silly.
Yeah, I think, like, for the most part, I kind of think of, like, you've got these three brothers, and I kind of think about them as variations of one man. That's kind of the takeaway that I get from it, is, like, I mean, obviously this doesn't have to be the be-all end-all. It's just, like, I think about them, like, and it just seems like it just comes off as, like, are they just, like, three variations of one man? Because you quite often see, like, to cut a long story short, like, they'll refer to Hades as Dark Zeus, or, like, Zeus of the Earth or something, because they don't want to say Hades or whatever, because it's very scary. I always think about the ocean and what that means for someone in the ancient world, right? Like, the ocean is where you're going to get a lot of your resources from. It's how you travel. Like, you're not getting in an airplane. You're not. You're taking your boat. So it's very scary, but, like, very plentiful. So that's kind of my, you know, how I go about thinking about Poseidon. Because, like, Poseidon at the moment in the story is not really the main... He's not a main character, like, he's there. And later on, he'll probably have some more stuff to do. Ooh. No spoilers. Or maybe he won't. No spoilers. But, like, you know, that's kind of how I go about it. Is I'm like, what is this, you know, this person who... Oh, that's the other thing, is I kind of like the idea of him being... Like we said, he seems to read as someone who is quite... I guess surly and violent, and, you know, he seems less reasonable, but I mean that we could make that case about most characters from mythology, to be honest. And I kind of think about, you know, like Lord of the Flies, and there's that character Piggy is the smartest character, but unfortunately he is the least articulate, so nobody takes him seriously. So I kind of apply the same sort of thing to Poseidon, in the sense that he actually does have a lot of smart things to say. Like, occasionally he'll drop some sort of truth bomb in a very articulate way, but for the most part they're like, oh, the sea is unruly and random, and, you know, he's kind of just going to do his thing. So I think that's how I think about Poseidon. I mean, obviously, if I'm like, I think this is a statement that's probably going to come up a lot in this interview, because we're talking about adaptations, and it's always going to be, you know, the elephant in the room. But, like, I am aware that he is not, like, beat for beat the same as, like, Poseidon from mythology. I mean, of course I could sit down and, you know, create a piece of media that is a beat for beat translation of Poseidon, but you know, what would that look like? It would just be him, like, fighting with Athena. Yeah, I mean, the text already exists. He's already there, and he's already great in the source material, and I personally don't think that I have anything to, like, add.
Oh, yeah. No, I was just, like, I think your Poseidon is just a lot better than real Poseidon, because if you were to depict him real, he would definitely be, like, a bit more boring, but also, like, most of his stories are just him being violent to women, like, honestly, like, 9 out of 10, and that's not fun. Like, that's not a fun character, you know? Whereas I love, like, that, yeah, like, he occasionally has his truth bombs, but otherwise he's just kind of, like, a sidekick in the best sort of way, where he's just sort of there in the background sometimes doing silly things, and I just fully enjoy that about him. But I think adaptation in general is, like, I mean, it's important to make changes because you, I mean, obviously you have to make changes in order to make a story work for now, but especially mm-hmm. just because you're right, like, that story already exists, the original one, so why retell it beat for beat? Like, what, yeah, what does that add?
Yeah, I mean, personally, like, I don't really look at my characters and think, oh, they are better than the existing text in any way. I'm just like, this is just me. Like, it's obviously the characters are, like, deeply compelling from mythology, and that's why we like them. That's why we, mm-hmm. you know, that's why people are obsessed with them. That's why they've stuck around for so long. But I think if you're, like, doing an adaptation for, like, I guess a certain market, you need to be like, how is this going to look through modern day sensibilities? Like, what is mm-hmm. going to work? So, like, some stuff is not going to translate well. Like, I guess for an example of what I personally really struggled with is there's the myth of Eros and Psyche, where there is a lot of, like, I mean, there's a lot of questions around, like, consent, like, today, like, I'm sure at the mm-hmm. time they were like, you know, this is fine, but, like, now it's like, I mean, I can't write a story about a man being like, I'm invisible and I'm coming into this mansion and we're gonna do it, but you're never gonna see me. And I'm like, that, like, I can't, like, serve that up in the year 2021 and not have a few eyebrows raised. Like, and, like, obviously we have context for these stories where we're like, I mean, we understand this of the time in, like, the world, the ancient worlds, we have that context to kind of explain what's happening there. Within a modern context, it just doesn't, it's a not do, unless you're trying to make a different type of comic, but, you know, it all depends.
Oh yeah, I think the same thing. I mean, even I covered Cupid and Psyche really early on in the podcast, and I think I even romanticized it too much, because for me, it's, like, the first myth I found as a kid, and so mm-hmm. I had this, like, romantic attachment to it in a way that is, like, maybe, you know, has skewed even my thoughts on it. So, yeah, I mean, that story specifically, it is such an interesting one, because the questions of consent should be very obvious, but I think so often it's, like, drilled into your head as being romantic, because the stories is, you know, it's meant to be romantic, and it always has been sort of taken that way. But then if you really do look at it objectively, yeah, it's like, no, she is literally, like, basically kidnapped to a palace yeah. and then an invisible guy to comes to her at night. Like, that's not ideal. Definitely not.
Yeah, and I mean, yeah, it's all about, like, context, right? But yeah, I mean, like, I had the same thing for, like, Hades and Persephone, where it was, like, a myth that I came to as a very young person. So I was like, to me, it's very romantic to me as a child. So I have that bias. Like, I realized as an adult, everyone has their favorite. But I think kind of the thing that is so compelling about all of these characters is that, you know, you've got, like, none of them are perfect. They all do, except for, like, maybe Prometheus. Like, did he ever do a bad? Like, has he ever done, like, a bad by, like, modern standards?
Well, I suppose it depends. Well, yeah, by modern standards, no, probably not.
Because Prometheus is, like, another personal fave of mine. Like, I always find him very interesting because he just seems very, like, of the people out there.
Well, I mean, yeah, he is quite, yeah, quite literally of the people.
Making sacrifices. Yeah, no.
Giving them fire.
But, like, for the most part, I think that's why we, you know, are so fascinated by them, is they do good and bad. And that's, you know, like, most people, we're all out there doing good and bad. You know, it makes them very textured.
Yeah, and they are just, I mean, on top of the good and bad, but they're just really complex generally, you know? Like, they really do have sort of everything to them, especially in those certain stories we get. I mean, Cupid and Psyche is an example. Definitely, you know, Hades and Persephone and so many of the other ones. When we have, like, a full-blown story, which so often we don't, but when we do, there really is so much. Like, yeah, I mean, the story of Aphrodite and Ares and Hephaestus, like, that alone is, like, one of the most ancient stories there is, and it is wild in so many different ways. I mean, there's lots of ways you can come at it in terms of, like, interpreting it, but on its surface, it is a lot. There is so much going on there, and I just, that alone is, like, a fascinating way to look at it. Yeah,
for sure. Like, I think so much of the fun of it for me is, like, you read these myths, right, and you're like, that's outrageous. It's so, like, delightfully absurd in some bits, and you're like, oh my gosh, what is happening here? And part of what is so exciting about it is going and learning about the ancient world and slowly contextualizing all these statements. That is learning why they're saying what they're saying. I mean, for example, there's so many times where they bring up, like, a girdle in the Homeric hymn to Demeter. They're always talking about her girdle, like, hanging low. And I'm like, I know that she does not have a girdle as we understand what a girdle is now. What is that? Like, you know that she's not out there just with a modern day girdle on. Like, it's got to be something else. So, like, working out what that item of clothing is very exciting for me. But, like,
no, that's, I guess, so true.
Like, yeah. The other thing, like, so this has actually always got me. So in the Odyssey, there's this bit where I think it's like when Odysseus is, like, almost at home. He's almost at home, and he goes to their island, and I think he still has to reveal that he's Odysseus. And they're like, come on, guys, let's do sports. And they all start doing sports. And someone is like, you don't look like you do sports at all. And he starts to cry. And they're like, oh my god, everyone chill out. Odysseus is crying because he feels like he's bad at sports. And for a long time, I thought this was like it's amazing, but also I'm like, why is he crying about sports? Like, but then I was listening, like, there's a lecture that I listened to. Basically, he's crying because, you know, sports were, like, very closely linked with training to be a warrior. So basically what they're saying is, like, you don't really look like a warrior. And he's like, oh my god, I don't, like, the shame of, like, losing face, not being good at the thing that he really wants to be seen as being good at. And that's why he's upset. And then you're like, oh, that makes so much more sense. You know, learning about what these people valued, what was important to them, what was not important at all to them. It's fascinating. Just, it's great.
No, I agree entirely. I mean, especially Odysseus. He's such an emotional man, so he can be so much. So when it comes to stuff like that, then, like, to turn it back to Lore Olympus, because as much as I also just love talking about mythology, I'm like, oh, people are going to be mad at me if I don't also ask about Lore Olympus. but yeah, so I mean, when it comes to, like, if that's the part that fascinates you so much, how does that translate into the show? Like, I know you do drop a lot of really subtle and, like, interesting connections to the ancient world, even though you're covering it in a modern world. But do you think about that part a lot? Like, how much ancient you're putting in?
Yeah, it's sort of like this weird, like, the universe that they live in within Lore Olympus is, like, this weird kind of, like, it's modern day, but it's not actually meant to be our modern day. Like, it's influenced by what we know and, like, things that we may find, like, shocking or might make us happy. But it's also, like, very much, like, I very much try to go in and inform this world with things that are still important to the ancient world. There's, like, an episode where, like, Persephone's, like, family comes to visit her, and they bring a cow as a gift. And this makes total sense. He's like, yeah, I got a cow. Also, like, Hades is very happy about receiving this cow. And I'm like, it's a good gift. It's a good gift to get a cow. What else? I think there's, like, a lot. So it's not, yeah, again, it's, like, not a one-to-one translation of it's here and now. Like, it's got, like, you know, I try to put in these elements where I can. And again, I think, for me, the myth itself has so much yield in terms of how you can interpret it. If you said to me, like, Laura Lopez is gone. Your work is gone. Start over. I'd be like, yay! And like, I would just start like a different interpretation, even if I finished it. And I was like, Laura Lopez is done now. It's complete. And someone was like, do you want to make another thing about Hades and Persephone? I'd be like, can I? Oh my gosh. Like, there's so much you could do with it. Like, there's so many interpretations in there. And also, it's very exciting because there's not a lot of stories about women. Mm-hmm. Like, general, like, there's not, and this mm-hmm. is like, the story, like, revolves primarily around Demeter, and it's amazing. It's amazing to have this whole body of text to tell us things that we may not know about the ancient world. And it's just, it's very cool. And so, I'm losing my track of thought because I'm so excited to be talking about this. I'm like, oh my God, like I talked to everyone I know already. But like, you could, okay, so number one, you could do like this fantastic feminist story about like Demeter and her search for like her daughter. That's great because it's like, it's unheard of. It's unheard of for like someone, they live in a patriarchal society within the context of this story, and basically Zeus has been like, I've given your daughter away, that's it, you're not getting her back. And again, like, oh yeah, Elizabeth Van Diver, that's her name, and she, like, her lectures are like fire. If you ever want to hear like somebody roast like the hero's journey, it's great. She will roast that there. It's fantastic. Chef's kiss. But she does great lectures, and she, if you ever want to have like really solid information about like Hades and Persephone and that myth, she's great. But I'm going to poorly relay that information now for you today.
Please.
But like the concept of, okay, so in the ancient world, right, you're a mother, you've got your beautiful daughter, you raised her, you spend every day together, and then one day your husband is like, okay, so I've met somebody cool down at the pub. Not at the pub, I don't know, somewhere. And we're gonna, your daughter's getting married. And like the likelihood of you seeing your daughter again is actually very slim, because it's not like, unless you're, you know, living in the same neighborhood, like you don't have a plane, like communication is not what we know it today. Like, you can't send your daughter an email. So it's like, she's gone with this man, and you'll probably not see her. And so this is kind of what Demeter's going through. She's like, my daughter is gone, she's married now, and I'll never see her again. And her fight against bureaucracy to get her daughter back is just, it's fantastic. But there's also like the opportunity to like talk about Persephone, because Persephone is a deity herself. We don't really ever get anything where she's like, my name's Persephone and this is my day and this is what it looks like. She doesn't have like a huge, like, people talk about her, but she does not say anything that much herself. So you're like, what? So there's a lot of like, again, and I reference like the beginning of the interview where we brought up like, you know, the gaps, they haunt me at night. I just want to know, the imagination runs wild. So like, I just, there's a lot you can do for like Persephone's agency within that story. There's like a lot of ambiguity around like, you know, she eats like the pomegranate seeds, but I'm like, I mean, clearly like there's rules, so she knows that she shouldn't eat things down there because she'll have to stay there, but she still eats it anyway. So you're like, whoa, why though? Like, why would you do it? And like, just the question around that, I'm like, did you want to stay? What the fuck is happening? Oh my god. And there's a lot there. Again, what's so interesting about it too is this like this massive shift in like, you can very much explore the underworld and how people felt about it, in the sense that like, and I won't be the first person who's probably said this on your podcast, and I won't be the last, but like, it's really obvious if you look at early works. Yeah, the ancient world was really scared of dying. This is all very scary, but you find like as time goes on, like, you know, start to romanticize it a bit more. Like, obviously, like we now in the modern world love to think about the afterlife. We're like, whoa, yeah, the afterlife, what's happening? Da, 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 da. And I think that's because we, like, most of us kind of are under the assumption that we're going to live until we're very old. that's the, you know, that's the assumption, we take that for granted. But like people in the ancient world, like the other day I was like, what was the life expectancy? And it was like 20 or 30. I'm like, I assume it's less if you're a woman because you're giving birth.
God, yeah.
You know, we expect babies to live. And I'm like, they're not living back then. It's no. Very rare.
Like, you'd have a lot of them.
Yeah. So like death was very scary, and you know, I think matching up those two points and like how it gets more, I guess, in the Odyssey, they talk about like Persephone a little bit, and she's very scary. She's very scary in the Odyssey.
The dread goddess.
They're like,
it.
Oh my god. Oh my god. I'm so like, who is this woman? She sounds incredible. But like they have all of that, and you know, they talk about the underworld and it's very scary. And then you've got Virgil later on, and he's got like pretty much this really extended like description of what the underworld has, and it's got like, you know, your heavenly sections as opposed to, you know, just death and more death. Sad death. It sucks here. So like they have more of a concept of like, you know, you might have like an awesome time in the underworld. I don't know. It could be good. Yeah, it could be good. And I think that's super interesting. So I think that really, like, I'm sorry, this is very long winded, but essentially, like, I think about that a lot within writing Lore Olympus, because I love the idea of like the chicken and the egg, which came first. Mm. So, like, at the beginning of Lore Olympus, you've got like, you know, this very kind of, like, a lot of people look at it and they're like, that's not how this is supposed to be. And I'm like, well, I'm getting there. Like, I'm still writing it. And I love the concept of getting to, like, how, without spoilers, you know, going from point A to point B. Like, why is it like this? I suppose a good example of this is, like, currently in the world of Lore Olympus is they, and this is, like, kind of a hard mechanic for me to work out, but essentially I was like, so, do they even have anything that like remotely resembles winter? Do they have that? Mm. So like they have that kind of in the underworld, in the sense that they don't have the resources to have sun and plentiful fields of goodness. So it's like it snows there and it's very cold. And no, I could have made it like very warm because I think it's meant to be close to the center of the earth. So I was like, I'm just going to make it very cold instead, which I know may not make sense, but it's just because they have like I mentioned, a lack of resources. In the mortal realm, in the world of Lore Olympus, the weather is always good. Like, it's either summer or spring. It's cracking. It's great. and so they do not yet have a concept of winter, but they will later on. So, I mean, no spoilers, but, like, I mean, I guess this myth has been out for a really long time, so spoilers, I guess.
There's things I think maybe you could see coming based on the myth,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
Not so much a spoiler.
Like, I think it's always, like, it's not a question of so much as when, it's more like how will this happen and how will we go about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What you were saying earlier about, you know, the way Demeter and Persephone's story goes, where it is, yeah, like, her dad comes in and is like, this is your husband now. And then Demeter's like, what the fuck? Like, what? I technically speaking, what you've just done is legal because you have control, but, like, I'm not going to let it stand. And I love that about her completely. And I had a woman on the podcast who, she specializes in, like, chthonic deities and,
oh, yeah,
like, the whole underworld. Ellie Macken Roberts is her name, and she was incredible. But she talked about how there's like this realm of, I think it was in part like Italian Greece, mm-hmm, or Greece, Italy, whatever, where the girls who were going off to be married would actually create their own, I forget, it was like a tablet of some kind. They would like make their own based around the myth of Persephone.
Oh, yes. And,
yeah, have you heard of these things?
Yes, yeah. And also, didn't she like, I have like no source for this and I can't remember where I heard it, but she liked baby pigs. She was like, please give me a baby pig and sacrifice. So
I love that.
But yeah, like, yeah, no, she's, it's interesting hearing about in these areas, you know, because like, again, mythology is very regional.
Mm-hmm.
It's very regional. So yeah, so regional. Like, I love hearing that she was like kind of worshipped as like a divine goddess. Like her marriage to Hades was like a big ass deal, and they were like,
yeah,
this, yeah, no, I I've heard of this, but I'm sure this woman has spoken about it much more eloquently than me.
She like specialized in it. It was fascinating to listen to for like, when I have academics on, I'm just kind of like, oh my God, my mind is blown. How can anybody be so like knowledgeable in one little subject? I'm amazed. But it was just so interesting to learn like the different ways the Persephone was used, where like some of the girls were like really afraid of their new husbands. They were afraid to get married because it was terrifying and they mm-hmm. didn't know what was before them. And so some of the depictions had that like that idea presented, you know, Persephone going with Hades unwillingly. And then alternatively, there were all these versions where the women were, the girls were like excited, they were eager, they were looking forward to this chapter in their life, and they presented Persephone as like really thrilled to go with Hades. And so you had these like just this dichotomy of it just made it so much more personal, and it gave me mm-hmm. such an interesting insight into their relationship, because it really like there is so much you can interpret into their relationship, like for good or bad, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think it is so interesting to see the way that an actual ancient person also saw that. It just makes it easier to be like, no, it is completely complex. It's based on individual people and how they saw it and how they saw it within their own lives and all of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just fascinating.
No, that sounds great. That sounds great. Yeah. No, I have, it is super interesting to hear about, like, you know, if you are going by region, what was more important to them? And like, obviously, like the life of someone in Athens is going to be very different to the life of someone out in Sicily. And it's like,
mm-hmm.
and like a lot of the times, like a lot of the information that we have is very like Athenian. So it is great to hear about these other places. And also like the other thing is, because it's over a long time.
Yes.
It's over
yes.
a long time. Like, correct me if I'm wrong. Just like 700 years between like the Odyssey and the Aeneid. I think it's 700 years.
At least.
And like Shakespeare is closer to us than that gap.
That's my go-to. I'm always saying that. Like every time I'm trying to drill that into people's heads is like, because people are always wondering, well, what's right and what's wrong? And it's like, no, it's just that there are 700 years, so things change. There's no right and wrong necessarily. But yeah, exactly. It's like looking back to Shakespeare's time and being like, why isn't everything exactly the same as it is now?
Yes. Like, it's like, I always think about it as kind of like how we look at, sorry, this is like kind of a tangent, but I knew this woman who used to give lectures on like fashions of the Elizabethan period. And she was so great. She would talk about like how they dyed the fabrics and all that stuff. But anyway, I won't go too deep into that. But she did have like this discussion about basically like the fashion that was in the Titanic, and like the outfits that Rose has are basically would be, she'd be like rocking up onto the Titanic dressed in like 80s style versus like now, and we'd be like, why is this very 80s person here with their very 80s look? And I love it so much. Like, just like, it is, yes, it's a big time, big place, lots of different rules, lots of different kings. I mean, there's a lot going on. There's no strict dogma. So that's why it's so interesting. And you see people fighting about stuff, and I'm like, no, guys, chill out. You're right, and you're right, and you're right, and you're right. And like, you over there in the back, you might be wrong, but that's cool. Like,
you're close enough.
like occasionally someone will like be like, oh my God, have you heard of this? And I'm like, no. And then it turns out that they're talking about Hades Town. So yeah, I mean, obviously, like, some people are going to be wrong. But for the most part, there's like, oh my God, this is so much to go on. There's so many different perspectives. It's very good. It's very, very good. Yeah.
Oh yeah. And it is so interesting though, just even the connection to Hadestown, like the way that people will take in a piece of adaptation, like some kind of a piece of classical reception. Mm-hmm. And then they will turn it as if like, obviously that whole thing came from a myth. It's like, that happens to me a lot, just with people questioning things. Like, I mean, I think a great example, and maybe one that you want to talk about too, because I find her particularly interesting in Lore Olympus, but is Minthe. So like everyone asks me about her. And I think you're probably a huge part of that.
Okay, look, I had no...
Yeah, I know. I want to hear your thoughts on her, because I like looked into her once and I was like, oh, she's like in two different places, like really late, like not like really late sourcing. I'm so fascinated by this character, and like you're not the only one who utilizes her, especially in Hades and Persephone adaptations. But this character who's like kind of an afterthought note, like in one source, has become this like big epic like foil, and I find that fascinating. So I want to hear how you created her.
So like, she's definitely like one of those figures that is definitely like you can only really find her like in fragments.
Yeah, and they're usually from like first century BC or AD. Like they're so fascinatingly late but interesting. Yeah. I love it.
You're like, excuse me? No, I think. Like, I mean, in my research, I was like, I literally can only find these little bits on her. And I think there's two conflicting points that I found about her. And this is the gist. It's either one, there's Hades and Persephone, they're married. And she's like this nymph that he has either is wanting to partake in or has. And then she basically is walking around being like, oh my god, I'm so much better than Persephone. The kind of thing, essentially, in Persephone is like, wow, excuse me, now you're a plant. So what do you think of that? Or there is like another version where Minth is Hades' current consort. And then he's like, so I hate to break it to you, but I got a wife, she's here now, this is kind of awkward, and she's mad, and she goes to, I guess, the mortal realm, for lack of a better description, and again shoots her mouth off, and is like, well, I'm better than her, like, and Demeter's like, well, fuck you, and turns her into a plant. She's like, no one's better than my daughter, and, like, turns her into a plant, and I'm like, sorry, I shouldn't laugh because it's very
no violent. I mean, but like, yeah, so, but it's Greek myth,
but yeah, you can like these two. So I guess like my adaptation comes from like mortals may not know, but I assume that most nymphs and other immortal creatures or like demi creatures understand what gods are like, which are that yeah. They should be avoided, like they're kind of like that they just do what they feel like, and this should be avoided at all costs. So I can't imagine what would be going through your head to be like, you know what, I'm just gonna pop off, like I'm just gonna totally go off. I'm like, who is this nymph who's just like really comfortable with going off? And that just really informs the whole story of like how I write her. I'm like, yep, okay, so you got this nymph, and she's like totally comfortable with basically saying that she's better than Persephone. And I'm like, by all accounts, Persephone is like, mwah. Any description that you get of her, like, she's clearly like the top shelf according to these ancient texts. Like, this is
the poet, I think it's Notus.
Oh, yeah. He's wild.
So he has this whole paragraph that literally I'm obsessed with, where he basically writes about how all the youth gods are like, whoa, excuse me, this goddess is very good looking, so we're all gonna go to like Demeter and offer up these gifts and be like, okay, gosh, like I think Hermes is like, you get my scepter, here you go, you can have this. And I think Hephaestus says something, and I think even there's a line, sorry, I should have it in front of me, but I don't. I haven't read it in a little while, but like there's like a bit where Ares is like going to give up his rioting with Aphrodite, and I'm like, oh my god, it's rioting with Aphrodite.
Oh my god. This is
very saucy. So clearly, that
sounds amazing.
So clearly she's very just,
she's hot.
She's obviously got something going on there. And yeah, to me, she's just like, I'm not having it. It's great.
I love that. I've been slowly reading bits and pieces of Nonus for Cadmus and Harmonia content, because they're my people.
Yeah.
And yeah, that Dionysiaca is something else as a source. Yeah, it is wild. And it's also from like the Hellenistic period too. Like it's also so late. And no, it's not even, I think it's much later. I think it's like, I don't even know. It's
very scandalous. Late. It's and very it's, scandalous. Yeah, and it's like on a bit where like describing like Persephone having a bath and everything.
Oh my god!
I'm pretty sure. Like, don't quote me.
No, I mean, I trust you.
I'm pretty sure there's like a bit where she's working on her loom and she gets real hot and then she has a bath and Zeus like sees her somehow in the, where she's having a bath and like exits the house of Hera. I think that's the words that are used. It's very scandalous. And I'm like, what? Excuse me?
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, that's great.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high-rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back, plus no payments for 90 days, and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
We went from normal life, healthy child to acute lymphoblastic leukemia or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy. And we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.
Well, okay, that kind of, even just mentioning some of those characters now, I'm curious about a couple of things. First, do you also obsessively use the website theoi.com?
Yes. Every day of my life.
It's
great because it like tells you things, but also tells you where to go find them.
Exactly.
Which is like a big deal to me because I'm like, you can tell me something, but like, I'd love to know where it is.
The same way. I find we're rare. We're a rare sort who's like, I need you to tell me the thing, but I also desperately need to know where I can find it in the original source.
People can tell you things and that's great, but like, where is it? Like, I just want to read it too. Like, I just want to know. Yeah. So that is what's great about that website is it has its scholarly sources and you're like, thank you. Now I can write my thing. And again, like, I guess this relates to like Lore Olympus as well, as I think some people think it's meant to be like, you know, a beat-for-beat thing, like a beat-for-beat interpretation. And I'm like, no. This is, like, something else. Like, it's inspired. And obviously, I've thought about it a lot. Like, I think about it every day of my life for, like, the last half decade. Please don't cite it as a scholarly source, for the love of God. Please don't write your essay and add in that, like, Hades made Persephone an espresso in his kitchen. Like, it's never happened. He never made her an espresso, guys. Called out. Canceled today. Telling lies.
I have to say though, like the fact that it is not at all a beat for beat telling of the myth is why I love Lore Olympus. Like, I have a lot of trouble with Hades and Persephone myth or retellings in certain cases because they often, I think, try to stay too literal, and then I have too much trouble with the darkness that is inherent in a lot of the literal myth. And yours doesn't. You've like separated yourself from all the dark bits in that way. I hope this. I'm hoping this comes across as good as I mean it, and I'll cut it accordingly. But like, that's why I love Lore Olympus versus like every other one that I've come across, because I'm like, you're not making Demeter out to be like some. I don't know. I guess most of them just make Demeter out to be this like horrific monster of a mother, and it bums me out.
Yeah, I mean, okay, like, I mean, like, a lot of people, you know, read Lore Olympus and they are very, like, frustrated with the character Demeter as I show her. And I have thoughts on this. Like, so I really like Demeter. I really like her. For me, I think about, she reminds me of the type of mother who was like, we're going to the cinema, we're going to the movies, but I will not buy you that terrible movie popcorn. I will stay home and I will make you some homemade popcorn that you will then have in your own little baggie to take to the cinema, and it will be so much better for you. And like, yeah, there are times in like Lore Olympus where like Demeter is definitely not perfect. She definitely, you know, has her moments where you're like, gosh, Demeter, you shouldn't have done that. But she also has like some redeemable qualities. And I think a lot of the things that she does within Lore Olympus is because she's very frightened. She's very, very frightened because she has, like, experienced the world in such a way which has caused her to be like, oh, no, I really want, you know, I really want my daughter to live the type of life that, you know, I want to live. And I think, you know, she's definitely far from perfect, but I think as the story goes along, people will be like, oh, that's why she is the way she is, and that makes her a sympathetic character. Mm-hmm. So I don't, like, entirely think, like, I think people do, you know, and this is no shade to them, like, however you want to tell your story is absolutely up to you. That's fine. You do your thing. But, like, for me personally, I personally, when I go about, like, writing characters, for the most part, I want them to do things that are wrong, but also be redeemable, mm-hmm. and also be, like, sympathetic. So, like, they're not going to get everything right. I like the concept of, like, almost making the characters, like, polarizing, where, you know, like, some people are going to be like, this really annoys me, and some people will be like, oh, I really relate to this, and I really enjoy those types of conversations where, you know, people can then come to understand each other a little bit better. I really enjoy Persephone within the story because I'm like, yeah, she did, like, kill a whole bunch of people. And I enjoy the conflict of that with her character, where she, you know, seems very nice and she's trying to, like, reconcile those, you know, those things. And it just, it makes for a very exciting and rewarding writing experience. So, like, mm-hmm. yeah, I mean, people, you know, at times will look at Demeter in the context of Lore Olympus and be like, oh, man, she's not it. But I'm like, just wait.
No, I think you've shown enough progression anyway. Like, she does still progress even in as much as you've written so far. Mm-hmm. Like, I can see, you can still see her grow in that way. Because I know what you mean. But, I mean, not to just, like, reassure you, which you probably don't need, but I really love her in Lore Olympus. And I'm picky with those.
Thank you. But, yeah, I mean, I definitely, you know, I mean, I know I have probably, like, a very specific approach to, like, how I portray the characters, and, you know, that's going to be different from, like, how other people do their retellings. Mm-hmm. And again, what people do with their retellings is definitely up to them, and more power to them. Like, I'm certainly not here to be like, well, they did this, so I'm gonna do that. I'm like, that's not what I'm about. That's not what I'm here for. Yeah,
no, and, like, I don't want it to sound like I'm judging people for what they create. It's more like for my enjoyment of it. Yeah.
Yeah, I think there's definitely, I think that's fine to be like, you know, sometimes something isn't just, like, sometimes something's just not for you, and that's totally cool bananas.
Yeah, well, and as somebody who is, like, so just completely obsessed with the mythology and the original sources, I sometimes do find it hard with certain retellings because it's just, like, my personality and the way that I take in the myths.
Yeah.
That it's just, like, yeah, it's not always going to work for me because I'm a bit of a lunatic when it comes to the original sources and, like, knowledge of them. But it's, I think I just, yeah, I really enjoyed the lightness, I guess, of the character, or of a lot of your characters, certainly not all of them. There's definitely darkness in this too, but I'm so curious about your choice to make Aphrodite and Ares, like, basically, if not officially together. I don't know if they're, like, officially together. I kind of like that Ares is kind of, like, the guy who's, like, lying around on the couch all the time. But, yeah.
My thoughts on that are, it's like,
I love them.
You know what? I did not think I'd be talking about them today, so now I'm, like, pulling a major play. But I really like the idea of Aphrodite being, like, pretty well organized in her own life. Like, I kind of look at her as being very, like, she's got her own things going on. She's very, like, I am an adult woman out here wheeling and dealing. We don't get that much, like, again, Aries is, like, one of those characters that you don't, like, hear that much about. Like, no. I mean, he gets some stuff, but I find him, like, again, it's, like, that whole, like, curiosity of, like, what else is he doing? How'd they get together? Like, and, you hear a lot of people reason this, and they're, like, they're both very passionate people, and that's why they're together. And I kind of view them in this kind of eternal on-again, off-again relationship, mm-hmm. where, like... She, you know, they love each other, but they may not necessarily be like, oh my god, like, we constantly need to be, like, devoted to each other forever. Like, I really like the concept of that Ruby only lovers left alive, where they've got, like, those two immortal vampires, and they don't, like, they've been alive for so long that they travel the world in, like, different areas, and they only see each other occasionally, and when they're together they love each other so much, and I'm like, I think that's so romantic actually. But I also haven't watched that movie in a long time, so if someone's like, what are you talking about, I'll be like, I don't know. It's a fever dream. But I do like that concept of, yeah, them, like, the characters, most of them are, like, immortal, and I like to think about what that might do to someone's brain being alive that long, and how that would affect you, and how you would, like, go about managing your relationships if you are alive for that long, and the progression of that. Yeah,
I really, no, that very much speaks to, I think, all of it, but also specifically them, because that's kind of, I mean, I have an attachment to them, but I completely agree with that general understanding of them, just that kind of, like, yeah, they're, you know, they love each other, but they're not, like, gonna be at each other's side all the time,
because
they're,
like, both I don't think they get married ever, unless
they're never technically together in the myths, beyond just having a lot of kids and therefore a lot of sex.
Yeah, like, they don't have, like, they don't talk a lot about marriage between the gods, really. Like, I mean, you've got, like, Zeus and Hera, and you've got, like, Hades and Persephone, and you've got Poseidon and his wife
Amphitrite.
Thank you.
She's always forgotten. She's not, like, that it's your fault, but she just always is.
I was like, pronunciation, I can do it.
Oh yeah, I know.
But, like, his wife that he got via his dolphin side.
Oh yeah. Trick.
But yeah, they don't talk about, like, marriage that much. Again, this is, like, why you go back to Hades and Persephone, because I'm like, this is a story about marriage, and you do have this whole bit in, I guess, I'm gonna cite, like, the Homeric hymn, because I mm-hmm. In personal preference, I like it better than, like, the other most put together text, which is by Ovid, which I just, it's very, like, descriptive and very beautiful, but also it's very, like, oh,
yeah,
it's definitely, like, it's a different type of story for sure. So I my personal preference is the Homeric hymn. But, like, you know, Hades does this whole bit where, like, she's leaving and he's like, I mean, this is probably, like, your not ideal situation, but, like, I've got all this stuff here. It would be pretty cool. And no one's allowed to, like, essentially the translation is, like, people aren't allowed to insult you. I'll fuck them up. Like, you're not going to lose face. You're not going to lose honor. I'll destroy them. And, it, like, I mean, obviously that's, like, problematic, but, like, it is, like, you know, you don't really get, like, a lot of these declarations within Greek mythology towards mm-hmm. women, towards goddess characters. And also there's Theseus and his colleague Pirithous. You know, they journey down into the underworld because he's like, I deserve to have daughters of Zeus as brides. And I'm like, I don't know why you would do this. I think I heard someone give a description. They did this because it was their destiny to do so, and they couldn't avoid it. But I don't know about it. But they head into the underworld, and Hades is just, like, there, and he's like, hi, and pretends to be nice to them, and then, you know, makes them be stuck to stone chairs forever. And I mean, well, one of them there forever. And I'm like, I mean, obviously, again, problematic but violent. But he's standing up for his wife. He's like, I'm just, and it doesn't happen, like, a huge amount in Greek mythology, so it's nice to, you know, nice. even though problematic.
I mean, I agree completely. I don't even think you need to clarify that it's problematic about them being stuck to chairs for life. Like, they deserve it completely. Theseus is the biggest asshole of all of Greek mythology, and Pirithous is his best friend, who then decided to, like, one-up him by being like, I'm gonna go abduct the queen of the underworld. Like, if anyone deserved, like, eternal punishment, it's them. So, I stand by that.
Okay, yeah, because he's, like, Mr. Forgetful. Mr. Forgetful. Like, he leaves his wife behind. Uh-huh. He, like, forgets to put up them sails. His dad dies. I'm like, uh-huh. Mr.
And then
you need to do some memory exercises, sir. You left your wife behind.
I mean, yeah. And then, like, the whole Daughters of Zeus thing, too. Like, Theseus decides he needs Helen, except that she, according to most sources, she's, like, 12 at the time. And he goes and kidnaps her to marry, and then Pirithous goes for Persephone. So, like, they're also doing that together, and Theseus just kills a ton of people and then marries his wife's sister after he left the first one on an island.
Yeah.
And, like,
it's like,
yeah, no.
The same dad, isn't it, the same king? Where he's like,
oh, yeah.
You left
yeah.
my other daughter on an island, but, like, uh-huh. I mean, sure. Like,
he also kidnapped an Amazon. Like,
oh, yeah.
He literally is the worst.
I think Ariadne. I like to believe the myth where Dionysus comes and marries her as dead. I think that's lovely.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh,
same.
That's
yeah.
nice. That's nice. So I like that. I don't like her dying with exposure on the island. I'm like, don't make her die.
No, no.
She was just trying to be helpful. She doesn't
yeah.
deserve this.
No, I too stand by she married Dionysus. After,
like, I think
for
most
sure.
people prefer that. It's definitely
yeah.
more interesting.
Yeah, he's better than Theseus anyway. Which, like, and, you know, you can decide how much to say or how much you allow me to keep on here. But I have to ask about, you have set up Zeus and Semele.
Oh,
and
yes.
then left us hanging for so long.
I know. Okay, look.
It's been so long.
I think, like, we're coming back.
Okay, good.
I mean, obviously we're going to come back to it. Because some people are like, where's Dionysus? And I'm like, well, Semele.
Yeah, I know. But don't think,
like,
that did not pass me by.
I think this is okay to leave in. It's fine.
Okay.
No, I mean, eventually he's going to make it to the Pantheon one way or another. I think, obviously, in terms of writing something that is episodic, and this is clearly something that, like, you know, I know now. But, like, when you... as a body of work, if this was all complete, you'd not be waiting that long to have, like, the resolution to this plot point. So I think now, I mean, probably it would make more sense to, like, shift that plot point to, like, a different place in the story. But again, I kind of look at Laurel Olympus as, like, one day it'll be finished, and, like, I'm writing for two audiences in the sense that, like, there's an audience that reads from week to week, essentially, or, like, maybe from month to month. But then, you know, you have to think about the whole story as is. Like, how will this read in three sittings? Like, someone's, mm-hmm. like, just come to it and they've read it like this. And it definitely makes, I think, for a different read. And I try to be mindful of both formats, because obviously you do need to be kind to the people who are reading it from week to week, because they, you know, they put me where I am. Thanks, week to week people. I see you. Thank you. But, you know, it definitely makes sense to have it be cohesive as a big whole piece, like a big whole text. So that this is a very difficult balance. So I think in hindsight, I probably would have shifted that event to somewhere else. But it just so happened that it fit in there. Unfortunately, like, I don't think, like, obviously, like, I don't intend for forever Hades to have fallen out with his brother Zeus. Yeah, like, clearly Dionysus is making his way into the story one way or another, so it's fine.
That's what matters, yeah. Honestly. That's what matters. We love him. And that just reminded me, I don't know how, because we weren't talking about it, but I'm trying to, like, phrase things in a way where I'm not just saying, like, I love this part, talk about it. But, like, I love the Titans. I love that you made them, like, enormous, like, monumental, like, And I mean, Kronos is like the best level of creepy that I could have ever imagined, in a way that I'm like, he's kind of dorky to me in the mythology, because it's just like, he just does such stupid shit, and but like, it's so violent, but also it's just so like over the top. But I find in his like enormous blue and scary, is he blue or gray, or he's something where you're just like, you're terrifying.
Yeah, he's kind of like a galaxy color. Sometimes he's red, sometimes he's blue. I kind of like the idea of the primordial gods being very big, because they're like the first ones, so they're very big, and I think it's like inconsistent in the sense that I think they could probably make themselves very small if they felt like it. Like they can, you know, take whatever size they want. So I kind of like imagine that every time they like procreate, their offspring kind of gets smaller and smaller, which is like, it's such a weird thing to think about, and I don't know how I landed with this. Like, because you see it kind of like in the Hades the game. Like, I have not played it myself because I was too busy making my comic. And if I play a game, my arm will drop off. But like, Zagreus in it is very small and Hades is very big. And I kind of, like, for me, like, again, because you've got like characters in Lore Olympus who are also very small and very big. And I like the idea is like, as they go along, they get smaller and smaller. So like, you know, like Hades is quite big. He's meant to be like a big guy who needs to buy like a bespoke larger car. Like, this very I kind of wish I made him a little smaller, because it makes him very difficult to draw in proportion to things. So I'm like, I have to draw him in a car. Like, I'm like, I've got this drawing of a car, and like, either Persephone has to look really tiny in the car, or Hades has to look really big in the car, and it makes it really hard. I really like dug myself a hole on that one. being frank, it's so difficult, because it's like, she's tiny, but also she gets very big, which is like, sorry, I just love the idea of her being very big. But yeah, she's like the littlest, and I kind of like do this because she's the latest to the pantheon. Like, so I kind of I'm fascinated with the structure of the pantheon and like when various deities came into it, and it's all very interesting. Like, I like, again, talking about not having answers to things, but if you even think about like the whole Titanomachy and like the division of wealth. So, you know, you've got these three brothers, and they're like, we get all this stuff. We get these realms, and the women who are there are just like, well, okay. And they kind of get the earth. This ranges from source to source, obviously, but they don't get a lot. And so for me, a lot of the tensions in Lore Olympus are kind of based on this division, where like, these characters got a lot, these characters got a little, and that is where, like, they've got like this historical tension with them that never really leaves them. And you don't hear a lot about it. And I'm like, I want to know about this. Like, obviously this is probably like a very traumatic situation. Like, like, we read about it, and we read about like Hades being like devoured, and these characters being devoured, and it's funny, but then you try and think about what that might really be like, and it's very scary. Yeah. And like, you think about like, I don't know, even Gaia being like forced to keep her children up inside her body.
Yeah.
Like, that must be very painful. It's just, I don't know, super, again, very compelling. Like, there's lots there there's lots to write about. And like, I know I've taken like, at times, a very like literal, like, it's very literal. And you could probably like be much more metaphorical with it, but I'm like, so he's literally like, these characters were like literally swallowed by Kronos, spent some time chilling out in there. And also, oh God, this is like not my a thing of my invention or thought. I've heard like a couple of people say it. Like, obviously I don't want to not credit people, but I think there was like some lecture that I listened to where like the order of which they came out of Kronos is really important, in the sense that like Hades was like the first son, and then on leaving he ended up being the last son, so he ends up being like, his importance is kind of damaged in this way, where he should be like the first son, the best one, but he's not, and he's suddenly now the last son who gets like the least rights to things, which I think definitely I think that's a really persuasive argument. I'm like, yeah, because they do have like such a big, you know, this first sons are a real big deal in classical literature. So, yeah.
It's funny, I've never thought about it in terms of the sons. I always just think about it in terms of, like, all the children, because it's Zeus and Hestia are the first in, first out. But yeah, it is so much more meaningful in that world to think about it, like, when it comes to the men, because they would be the ones to inherit everything anyway. Yes. So that's very interesting. Yeah, I hadn't thought about that.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I think about, like, in this context, if we're talking about Lore Olympus, because obviously, another elephant in the room, incest. And riding around this is very difficult. It's very difficult, and I'm constantly in fear of messing it up. I feel like
I get that.
I'm in a cat suit. I'm in the museum. There's lasers around me. I'm like jumping around the lasers, like trying to avoid the incest. And one day, one of these days, someone's gonna have like a like gotcha moment with me, and I'm just waiting for it. It's so hard. So yeah, I made the. Like, again, this is where you have to, like, take liberties, because either you're going to have to be like, okay, so this just incest. And, like, it's very hard. It's a very hard selling point in a modern context. Like, if you're talking to, like, I mean, obviously, if you're talking to someone who's like, oh, I know a lot about Greek mythology, and this is a fact that I know and have known for a long time, and I've moved past it. Like,
yeah, clearly, you have to, though. Like, you have to.
I don't know. This is, like, another question that I have, where clearly, like, I know in the ancient world they were aware of, like, incest, so they knew not to marry their sisters, and I think that they knew not to do this, so I really want to know what they thought about, like, these relationships between the gods and, like, how they viewed them. I'm very curious about that, so if you ever find the answer to that, please let me know. But anyway, like, you've got Cronus, and I kind of had to, like, separate off their sisters in, like, a different way. So Hestia, Hera, and Demeter, in this case, are, like, made by Metis. She's like, I'm going to make them so they're not related by blood, and they're, like, made from, like it's more, like, it's kind of etiological in the sense that they're made from things from, like, the earth or things around that she found. So there is... You know, obviously, I had to take some liberties to avoid the incest. And, like, again, like, Demeter made Persephone on her own. But I don't think this is, like, I don't think this is, like, you know, it's not out of the realm of possibilities. Like, there's, like, a lot of, you know, times where, I don't know, like, Hera made Hephaestus on her own. Like, she was literally like, I'm so mad that Zeus had Athena on his own. I can make a baby. Like... I'll show you. Like, so I thought it's not out of the realm of possibility for these characters to be like making these babies on their own. I think that's, you know, it's fine. It's absolutely. Like, don't worry, everyone. It's fine. Yeah.
No, but God, it's better. Yeah, I mean, making those liberty or taking those liberties is certainly better than being like. So here's the thing: Hades is Persephone's uncle on both sides
because he's like a double uncle. To make it more difficult, like even in ancient Greece, they were like apparently. So they didn't view marrying your uncle as incest either. Like, no. So that's where again, if you go and listen to this thing by Elizabeth Van Diver, which I encourage everyone to do because it's so great. Yeah, it's really common to, because I think it's super common to marry your uncle because he knows your dad.
That's exactly it, right?
And it keeps, he knows your dad. Wealth like close by because your dad's like, but my brother's my best bud. It makes sense, and it keeps the wealth close by, and I know where all my stuff's going. So, like, they didn't think that was incest, but they certainly thought, like, brother-sister was incest. But that was, like, where they drew the line, and I think,
Yeah, I think for the gods, it must have just been that, like, there were no other options, so somehow it's okay, where it's, like, it just doesn't count for them, because...
Like, yeah, I mean, this is, like, if you're dealing with any sort of, like, pantheon, I feel like this is very much the case across the board.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
because who else are they going to marry?
Who are they going to? They're like, they're not going to... Maybe they're just like, what's worse, getting with a mortal, which I think they knew is beneath them, or, like, their own siblings. I don't know. It's very, like... I have questions. I have, again, questions, which I want to know the answers to. I'm very curious.
Yeah. all I want in the world is all the missing texts. That's all I want.
Yeah, I think maybe they just, like, it's not a big deal. I don't, yeah. It's not a big deal. Don't worry about it. There's probably just lack of options. I don't know.
There was one question that I wanted to finish it off with. I would love to know who is your favorite character to write or to draw, whichever is sort of the more fun thing for you. Like, who do you really get a thrill to work with?
Like, who do I like drawing this?
Yeah, or just like, who do you like, oh, I get to do this episode today, this particular character anytime, is like a favorite.
Anytime it's like any romance-based thing to do with Hades and Persephone. Mm-hmm. Which is actually like really limited at the moment in this comic about them. So anytime I get to like do anything, I'm like, yeah, it's so exciting. Or anything that involves setting the tone. So there are definitely not all episodes are created equally. That's impossible. So I definitely enjoy the big swirly artistic ones where I get to be like, this is more metaphorical. As opposed to like ones where they're like standing in a kitchen, right? Yeah. Like they're in the kitchen, and this is Hades' kitchen, and this is like the 52nd episode of Hades' kitchen. So that does not, like in the year 2001, does not entice me that much anymore. But if you were like, oh, you know, that's a big swirly picture of Persephone turning into butterflies, I'd be like, yes, I'm gonna do that today. Yes, or like, I don't know, just anything where I get to draw them, like, using their powers. That's very fun.
Yeah.
That's a fun thing to do. I'd say still Hades and Persephone. Yeah.
I love that. I can immediately, like, as soon as you start talking about that, I can then picture scrolling those ones where you and I can see exactly what you mean, especially when I think you work with like some flashbacks with when it comes to like the Titans and stuff like that. I feel like so often they're really like visual and cool, and like there's a lot. I'm artistic in my own way, but not in describing it. But I could like picture it, what you mean.
Also, like anything to do with like the lore of the world that they live in. So, like, again, like a while ago, someone was like, I didn't even know why Lore Olympus is called Lore Olympus. And I was like, I could see why you might ask that question. But I'd like to think that like now it's like more apparent. Is it's like this is some lore that they have. Like, it may not necessarily be like factually correct, but in this universe, this is like. Again, like I mentioned before about like not knowing the answers to questions, I'm like, here's the answers to my question and trying to answer myself within this body of text. Yeah, so.
Yeah. No, I love that. Yeah, I just really enjoy the way you're working with all of that and the way you are kind of, I guess, answering those questions that we have, which is nice because I too am obsessed with getting the answers to like what we don't know. My people are Cadmus and Harmonia, and they also are like deeply lacking in sourcing, except for that weirdo Nonus, which is like with his completely bizarre epic. but yeah, so I get it. It's just like there's so many questions, there's so many missing pieces. Thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you for having me. No, it's been a blast. It's been a blast.
Oh, nerds, thank you all so much for listening. I mean, this was so much fun. If you haven't read Rachel's webtoon, Lore Olympus, please highly recommend. It's really fun and beautiful and a great and lovely adaptation of Greek myth generally and the Hades and Persephone myth specifically. But what I love so much about Lore Olympus is the way she's adapting so many myths into this world and the way she's doing them. So I just generally highly recommend this webtoon. It's gorgeous, and then obviously highly recommend it in book form too. Should be available wherever you live in book form again as of today, the day this episode is being released. So thank you all so much for listening. This is one of my most exciting conversations and one that I know so many of you are going to be so excited by, and that alone just makes me so much more excited. So I really appreciate you all. You are all the best. This job is very fun. Greek mythology is super cool and dorky in the absolute best way. I am Liv, and I love this shit.
Mm-hmm.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
We went from normal life, healthy child to acute lymphoblastic leukemia or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy. And we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.